everyone. Welcome back to our series on the books of the Bible. And today we're going to move on and start to look at the book of Esther. The book of Esther is a really cool book when we look at it because it shows a lot of things that are taking place in God's deliverance of his people. But unlike most of the stories of deliverance that we see, especially in the Old Testament, this one doesn't have any miracles in it. It doesn't have any miraculous intervention on the part of our God, but rather it relies entirely on God's providence. The book of Esther takes place during the book of Ezra that we looked at a couple of weeks ago. At this point in the Bible, we've seen everything's kind of been in timeline order. Of course, the books of 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd Chronicles kind of went concurrently with each other. And then after those things, we saw Ezra and Nehemiah. But at this point in the Bible, the timeline kind of goes out the window and it's just extra books. The book of Esther kind of just covers a time that had already been covered. The book of Job goes all the way back to the very beginning and times in the book of Genesis. Psalms kind of spans a lot of it depending on who wrote it. And going on forward, the prophets span a whole lot of different times as we look at them. But the book of Esther takes place during the book of Ezra, and most people say it takes place between chapters 6 and 7 of the book of Ezra. And remember when we were looking at the book of Ezra, we talked about how it was the story of God's people starting to return back to Jerusalem. Judah had been taken into captivity by Babylon, and then during the time that they were in captivity, Babylon had been conquered by Persia, King Cyrus and Persia. So at this time that we're looking at in the book of Esther, we see that the king that is basically ruling over Israel, ruling over Judah or God's people, is King Ahasuerus, or a lot of other places refer to him as Xerxes, spelled X-E-R-X-E-S. Xerxes is the king that is over Persia at this time and therefore is over Israel. So as we start to look, we see that this is the people that are ruling over the children of Israel. And in the book of Ezra, we saw that a number of the Israelites had already been allowed to go, and they started to rebuild the temple of God in Jerusalem. As we move forward in the next little while, after the book of Esther, we're going to see that Ezra is allowed to return and to restore the law to Israel. And then ultimately in Nehemiah, they're going to go back and rebuild the wall. So the book of Esther falls right in the middle of the carrying out of the captivity, the return to Jerusalem. But in this book, we basically see a problem that arises that threatens to destroy all of this for the Israelite people, that threatens to destroy everything for the Jews, because there's a man that's going to rise up and try to destroy them. But as we open on this book, we see that King Ahasuerus, or Xerxes, is searching for a new queen. He's searching for a woman who is going to basically be the one that there has some amount of power in Persia. And as he starts to look around, ultimately a woman who is a Jew named Esther is selected. As we look at Esther, we learn that this is a woman who has no mother or father, but rather she was raised by her uncle, a man named Mordecai. And as time goes on, we see in chapter 2 that Esther is ultimately selected to be the queen over Persia. And in chapter 3, we're introduced to both the villain of this story and the major problem that is going to go on for the Israelite people. In chapter 3, we start to see that a man named Haman rises up. And he becomes very powerful in Persia, in the land that is conquered, in the land that is ruled by Persia, and basically is second in command to the king, or so it seems. He's more powerful and greater than all the other princes that are there. And as he travels around through the land, people stand up and they bow down before him. They pay homage to this man, Haman, as he walks around. But Mordecai, who we already said is Esther, the queen's uncle, refuses to do so. He is a Jew and therefore refuses to give homage, to worship anyone that is not God. Now, when Haman sees this, he becomes very angry. He becomes angry that someone is not willing to stand up and to pay homage, to worship him, to give him this praise that he feels he is due. And because of this, he becomes very angry and he decides that he's going to kill not just Mordecai, but he wants to wipe out all of Mordecai's people, which of course are the Jews. Now, one thing that's important to note is that up to this point, Esther, I keep saying Ezra, but Esther has not told King Ahasuerus that she is a Jew. She doesn't give him any background of her people, who her father is, or who she was raised by, which is Mordecai. So he doesn't know this. But what Haman does is he goes to the king and he says, look, in your kingdom, there is a group of people who refuse to obey your commandments. There's a group of people who have their own laws that do their own things. And he is talking about the Jews. And he says, I want to go and I want to punish these people. I want to correct them effectively. And what King Ahasuerus does is he sits down and he basically takes off what is known as his signet ring. So gives it to Haman, basically giving Haman the right to make laws. At this time, Haman goes in and he makes a law that states that anyone that does not bow down, that any of the people of the Jews, basically, are going to be put to death. They're going to be punished because of the people that they are. And ultimately, Haman is trying to wipe out God's people. Now, as we move into chapter 4, we see that there has to be a change in these things. It starts out and it says, when Mordecai hears about these things, Esther's uncle, when he hears about these things, he starts to mourn. He sits in sackcloth and ashes, and him and most of the Jews that are living there in Persia start to do this same thing. They are mourning, they are fasting, they are hoping for whatever can happen to basically spare their lives. And he sends to Esther, and Esther goes to him to try and find out why he is upset. And he tells her about this decree that has been made and basically pleads with her, is there anything that you can do? Is there anything that you can do to bring our people back, to put us back in the good graces of the king? Because remember, Esther has a pretty good amount of pull with the king. So Esther, after weighing the options, eventually agrees. Now, this is not something that is as simple as just walking into your husband or your wife and asking a question. For Esther, there were some serious consequences if she did something that was wrong. And basically, no one was allowed to just walk into the chamber of the king uninvited. So for Esther to go in uninvited was basically a roll of the dice for her. She could have been put to death for doing this, but ultimately when she goes in, the king extends his scepter to her. She goes up and touches it. And this is basically the king showing her his good graces, accepting her and allowing her to come in to speak. And King Ahasuerus says to her, what do you want? I will give you anything up to half of the kingdom. And Esther says, I want you and Haman to come to a banquet with me. So she goes and Haman comes and they both sit down at a banquet with Esther. And during this time, during the time of Haman, while he has this reign, he has gone and he has built a gallows effectively to try to put Mordecai to death. He's done all of these things in trying to kill the Israelite people. But now when the king and Haman sit down with Esther for a feast, the king again asks Esther, what can I do for you? What do you want from me? And Esther basically lays it out before him. She tells him, look, there is a man who is trying to kill my people. There is a man who is trying to put to death my entire family. And the king says, who is it? What can I do about this? And at this time, Esther says, it is this wicked Haman who sits across the table from us. At this time, the king is very angry. And ultimately, there are going to be a number of things that happen. Haman is going to be put to death on the gallows that he had made for Mordecai. Haman's entire rule, the things that he was in charge of, are ultimately going to be given to Mordecai. Mordecai is going to basically become the right-hand man to King Ahasuerus. And beyond this, Esther goes and she asks of the king, can you get rid of the decree that Haman has made? So the king wipes out this decree that basically charges that the Jews are going to be put to death. And in its place, King Ahasuerus puts a decree that says that basically protects the Jews. Throughout this story, it is an amazing story of a person stepping up in a time of need. It's an amazing story of God through his providence, through no miraculous means, protecting his people by the people that he has put in place. There's one final verse that I want us to leave with. And I think it's probably the most recognizable verse
in the book of Esther. And this is Esther chapter 4 and verse 14. Esther has sent and has talked to Mordecai, and Mordecai is now sending back to Esther. And in verse 14, he says, "For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But if you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" I believe that that phrase there at the end of verse 14 wraps up the book of Esther. For who knows, maybe you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. We understand the reason why Esther was placed in the kingdom, why she was chosen as queen. And ultimately, we see God working through natural means, God working through his providence to put Esther in a place where she is able to have pull, where she is able to affect her people and ultimately to save them. When we look at this as Christians, we have to understand that God also works today in his providence. He no longer works in miraculous means, but he works in natural ways around us. There may be opportunities, there may be times when we are placed into a position for such a time to help the furtherance of the gospel, to help the spreading of the word of God, to bring more souls to Christ. We need to take the opportunities that are set before us to do the things which are right, to do that which is good in the sight of God, because who knows, maybe we are put in this position for just a time as this. The book of Esther has a lot more that you can go into. There's some parts that we had to skip over for the sake of time, but ultimately it is a book that shows God's care for his people, his providence, and really is a story of someone stepping up while they are in a time of need. I hope this has given us a desire to go and to study the book of Esther a little bit more. I hope you will dive into it and learn more about the way that God worked among his people while they were in captivity. But that's all that we have for today. Next week, we're going to move on. We're going to look at the book of Job. So hopefully you'll be able to join us then. Thank you all very much.